Washington, D.C., it is 88 degrees, partly cloudy. In New York City, 82, mostly cloudy. Daytime temperatures are expected to stay in the low to mid-80s in both cities throughout the week. From WPFW in Washington, I'm Sue Goodwin.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Sounding the Big Pond. Today, we're bringing you a German-American story, some music that goes along with it, and an interview with a very special guest. We'll explore both sides of the Atlantic and take you along on a ride. Stay tuned.
Hey friends, herzlich willkommen from WPFW and the Goethe Institute. This is Sounding the Big Pond. I'm Verena Hütter, and you better get out some Kleenex, as today's show is a farewell show. This will be the final German-American radio hour. We started the show in July 2019 and aired 26 episodes of Sounding the Big Pond through March 2020 in season 1, and we resumed the show for season 2 in September 2021 and aired 44 episodes until today. So let's do some math. That's a total of 70 German-American radio hours that we spent together, and believe me, I enjoyed every single one of them. I thank you so much for your interest and support. So let's celebrate the good times we spent together. We'll tune into some farewell songs selected by Sounding the Big Pond music consultant Andrea Ströhl. We'll welcome today's special guest, WPFW's very own program director Katia Stitt, and we'll start as always with a German-American radio story. 2 weeks ago, we had Salt Lake City-based radio producer Scott Carrier as our special guest and listened to his radio essay on ball bearings. And for today's farewell show, I decided to air another radio essay that Scott contributed to the Big Ponder series, my favorite that Scott produced back in 2019. It's called Germans on Harleys, and it's the story of a bunch of German dentists on their way through Zion National Park in Utah. Scott Carrier, Germans on Harleys. Enjoy.
In southern Utah, we have 5 national parks: Arches, Zion, Capitol Reef, Bryce Canyon, and Canyonlands. They're spread out across a geologic province called the Colorado Plateau, a massive upthrust of red sandstone 350 miles in diameter, reaching into Colorado, New Mexico, and Arizona. Think of the Grand Canyon in northern Arizona. It's really big, truly awesome, but it's just a small, tiny part of the greater Colorado Plateau. Tourists come from all over the world to see these parks. The French and Italians rent cars and camper vans to tour from park to park, while the Chinese seem to prefer tour buses. And the Germans, or at least a noticeable number of Germans, rent Harley-Davidson motorcycles, and ride in packs. I know this because I've seen them. For example, perhaps the most dramatic encounter, years ago, I was driving through the very small town of Mexican Hat, Utah, in the middle of the Colorado Plateau, next to the San Juan River, overlooking Monument Valley, where John Ford made his westerns. I was driving slowly up the hill from the river and came around a bend, and suddenly there was a man standing in the middle of the road, dressed in motorcycle leathers, staring straight up into the sky, awestruck, as if an angel was descending from heaven. I pulled over and got out and saw there were 200 white pelicans circling directly overhead, so close you could hear the wind rushing over their wings. Huge birds with 9-foot wingspans, all white except for black on the wingtips. They soar, and they were soaring around us and up into a funnel, and it felt like being magically levitated, like hopefully what happens when you die. I walked over to the biker dude and said, "Beautiful, idyllic, isn't it?" And without looking down or looking at me, he said, "My friends are over there," pointing across the road to the bar where 6 Harleys were parked outside. "You're German?" I asked. "We're dentists," he said, "from Hamburg." And then he laid down with his back on the white line of the highway so he could gaze straight upward without having to crane his neck. He lifted one hand and let it fall to the asphalt with a finger pointing to the bar and said, "My friends are over there." He was clearly having an ecstatic moment, so much so I wondered if maybe he'd eaten some mushrooms or LSD and was hallucinating, having trouble forming sentences. I thought about suggesting he move off the road, but there wasn't any traffic to speak of, and I'm not a cop, so I just said, "Welcome to America," and got in my car and drove away. That was years ago, but I've seen Germans on Harleys in southern Utah since then. I hear them in the restaurants, laughing and having a good time. And it seems like they're having a better time than the French or the Chinese. This makes me wonder, what is it about the Germans, their culture, that makes them want to ride Harleys across the Colorado Plateau? So, a few weeks ago, I drove down to southern Utah from my home in Salt Lake City to get some answers. In Mexican Hat, the same place I found the dentist from Hamburg, I met up with a tour group of 20 Germans who'd rented Harleys in San Diego. They were a more conservative group, nobody wearing leathers or hallucinating. I told them I was just wondering why they come here on Harleys.
"I love it. I'm so in love with this place. And it's a different traveling on motorcycles than in a car. It's a completely different experience."
"It's so different for us, for German people, and everything is so white."
"White?"
"Yes, the desert and the mountains and the colors of the mountains, the colors of the rocks. It's amazing."
"And it's different riding here than back home because the streets are wider. It's really bad in Germany with people rushing you and putting pressure on you. If you're blocking somebody's way, then they get really annoyed at you easily, which is not the case here. People are very, very patient and, yeah, no rush.
It is such a freedom here that I don't have the feeling of any fear, and I guess everything what you can see is so breathtaking that you really don't think about what could happen, and it's dangerous and it's deep, and this is what I felt here, being free. Being free is pretty much this, which would round it up."
"How's it different than the freedom in Germany?"
I would say because it's so wide, it just gives you more a wider view of everything. It's not so closed up like in Germany. That's always what my feeling here is, everything wide. And this is, I guess, what it makes so beautiful. Huh. It's huge. There are other dimensions than we are used to. And this is just what I would see here. And every day I realize the colors. the colors are here so different and beautiful. I mean, this is something which we are not used to. Certainly not.
Erstens, weil das Land halt so überdimensional groß ist. Ja, für mich spektakulär.
Some of the riders did not speak English, so I spoke to them with the help of translation.
Mehr als das. Weil
but it seemed they were all saying pretty much the same thing.
So his dreams were fulfilled more than he expected because he didn't expect the wideness of the area in the US.
The wideness.
Yes.
They come because it's so wide, which was somehow less than what I was hoping for. I wondered if maybe something was being lost in translation. So when I got back home, I asked my friend Scott Abbott to listen to the interviews that were in German. He has a PhD in German literature from Princeton University.
Your translator kept using the word wide to somehow describe what they were feeling and seeing. And they kept, the people she was translating kept saying, this is inexpressible. Yeah, it's not expressible. So they're talking about this landscape that they're in, and they're talking about it in terms that felt to me like Immanuel Kant's theory of the sublime.
Oh, really?
Yeah. One man said something about a non-dimensional, over-dimensional, überdimensional gross, yeah, überdimensional gross. So gross means large. And then it's large without dimensions, can't be measured. He's just used words that Kant would have written. You have this feeling in nature that is overwhelming, and it's also pleasurable. And how can it be both overwhelming and pleasurable? And so he says there's a kind of mathematical sublime. That's when something's simply too big for your imagination to grasp it. Then he talks about a dynamic sublime when you're standing right under a huge cliff, maybe an overhanging cliff, or you're near a volcano. That threatens to overwhelm you. It makes you feel powerless. And you know that nature is so much more powerful than you are. But you can come back around with your mind and think, but I'm a bit distant from it, or I can see it and I know it's not going to reach me, something like that. And so if Kant was right, it's a really important experience for us to be overwhelmed by nature. We sense our inadequacy and powerlessness, and then at the same time can feel that we can deal with this in one way or another. We're part of nature. And they were very clear on that. And so their most famous poet is Goethe. He was obsessed with nature. His first novel, The Sorrows of Young Werther, is about this young man who lies on the breast of the earth and feels the worms crawling under him, and it's like this mystical union. That's all through that novel. About the same time, Goethe wrote a poem, Wie herrlich leuchtet mir die Natur, wie glänzt die Sonne, wie lacht die Flur. And it's the sun is just shining so intensely on me, and I'm one with nature. So he had this incredible desire all his life to be one with nature. He said the three most important influences of my life were Shakespeare, Carl von Linné, who did that scientific system, categorizing, and Spinoza. And Spinoza got kicked out of his synagogue in Amsterdam when he said things like God, comma, or nature. In fact, somebody attacked him with a knife on the synagogue steps when he was 21 years old. Tried to kill him. Wow. Then they excommunicated him when he was 22.
At the time, it was like late 1700s?
Yeah. The philosophers, Fichte, Schelling, Hegel, they all taught at the same university, and Goethe was head of the university in Jena.
Really?
Yeah. It was an amazing group of people all gathered together. And Schelling may be the most interesting in terms of nature and how Germans might still be seeing nature today. He wrote Nature Philosophy. Nature is visible spirit, and spirit is invisible nature. And the German word for spirit is also the word for mind. So he's saying also nature is visible mind, and mind is invisible spirit. And so if you see yourself as nature, then all of a sudden you're one with the whole thing, and everything is one with you, and then it's a mystical experience, and maybe it's enhanced if you're in a place like the Harley riders that you were seeing. Maybe it's enhanced if all of a sudden you see the incredible distance that that they were seeing. They'd never seen that distance. Maybe it's that it's sublime that Kant was talking about. Maybe that's what happens right there. And Germans may be especially open to it because of that cultural background. Or maybe it's just human. Maybe we don't we all feel that?
Yes, I think it's true. I just didn't know the Germans were among the first to write about it. None of the Harley riders I spoke with mentioned Kant or the German Romantics, but I bet the dentist from Hamburg knew the poem by Goethe. Wie herrlich leuchtet mir die Natur, wie glänzt die Sonne, wie lacht die Flur.
You're listening to Sounding the Big Pond from WPFW and the Goethe Institute. Stay tuned for more German-American stories after this break.
Summertime, summer comes a-rolling. WPFW Washington. Today is the last show of Sounding the Big Pond. And I was thinking about who to invite to this last show. And I knew immediately that's Katia. And thanks so much for accepting the invite. And we're very, very close together here in the little improvised recording studio at the Goethe Institute on 14th and R Street, because one microphone, that is my microphone, and it's already on its way over the Atlantic. So we share a mic and we share some good years. And we just said, like, we really got good friends. And so thank you so much for coming. And Katia, one question for you is, you dedicated 1 hour of German-American nerdy stories in your WPFW schedule. So why did you do this? Do you have an own German connection? Do you?
Well, excuse me. First of all, Verena, thank you for having me today on the Big Pond. It's really my honor and pleasure to be here. And so I do have a German connection, but I would say that connection informed me of how valuable and how important and how wonderful these stories are coming out of the German diaspora, if you will, because, you know, as you know, Sounding the Big Pond is stories from everywhere, but focusing on the German connection in it. I would say, first of all, the proximity of the Goethe Institute and WPFW initially in the same building on K Street certainly was a great reason. But then we found that there was a lot of synergy in terms of the audiences that we served, in terms of the art and culture that both institutions wanted to highlight. And so it really was a natural, we're women's sisterhood, if you will, I would say, to bring us together. You know, and the stories, they're so diverse and so interesting. Some, you know, you really are. I know often when I'm listening, I'm on edge, waiting to hear what's going to happen next in some of the stories. Some of them are very uplifting and inspiring. Some have been troubling. Some are just, you know, your curiosity is piqued because it's something, either an entity or a practice that you've never thought of before, but there's someone in the world that has thought of it and has documented it. So I just see it as an extension, really, of the work that WPFW does in terms of making sure that, forgive the pun, but that we do look at this big pond that we're in. You know, the world is large, and we want to bring as much of the world to our listeners as possible. And Sounding the Big Pond did that for us for many years.
That's so good to hear, and I will make sure to share this also with the producers of the stories. But have you yourself been to Germany across the big pond?
I have been to Germany many times. I first started going to Germany in my 20s when I was a tour manager for a band called Defunct, and they were a big jazz funk band. And back then, the tours would be all summer. You know, you'd go for all the festivals, the open airs, you know, in the summertime, although you'd do club dates, but you would be there moving around Europe 30 days. And many of those dates were in Germany. And so I think very early on, I fell in love with Germany. I love the very modern juxtaposed against the very ancient in Germany in terms of the architecture. I love the cleanliness of German cities and the order. There's a certain kind of order that makes sense to my brain. You all have some of the best health food stores I've ever been in anywhere in the world. You know, even in the pharmacies, I'd get sick. And like right there in the pharmacy, there was a natural remedy that the pharmacist was recommending to me. So, you know, the whole practice of walking in the forest for 2 hours. I certainly developed a love for that. Or
I just was thinking about my first week in the U.S. 6 years ago. I really had a cold, and I went to the Safeway on Wisconsin Avenue and asked about, like, I wanted to get some of this natural thing that I used to take. Yeah. It's like little liquid drops or with herbs. And I asked for it, and the guy was like, oh, no, we don't believe in nature here in the U.S. I was like, okay, but I got something better for you. And so, yeah, that's true. The pharmacies are different.
Isn't it amazing? I mean, for every product, right? And the fact that, you know, so that was my entree into Germany, if you will. And then Sven and I were together for 7 years. He is Johanna's father. And
Johanna's your daughter.
And Johanna is our daughter, right? Named after her paternal grandmother, Johanna, sure. Her German, and then her middle name is Medelia, which is my great-grandmother. Ah. But so we got both cultures in there. But his mother, it was amazing. She'd ride her bike every morning, and you probably grew up this way, to the market, and she would get us fresh bread, cheeses, fresh squeezed orange juice. I mean, it was just such a health. It felt so healthy, you know, like the way one should live, you know, walking in the forest for 2 hours with the dog and then coming back and having something just very simple but wholesome. And every meal was fresh like that. Now, I'm sure that doesn't happen in every German household, and I'm sure there are American households where that does happen. But there was a lot there to really fall in love with, and to my, and the music and the arts, you know. again, this embracing, first of all, to have governments embrace, and it might have changed since those years, but for governments to subsidize the kind of performance and visual art and dance, theater that I saw there in my youth was quite amazing. We have the National Endowment for the Arts here, but for the most part, as you know, artists are on their own in America. I mean, unless you're privy to get a foundation grant or you get NEA money or something, for the most part, you're on your own. There is no safety net. There is no way to get your, a public way to get your art done. And it's very competitive. There I saw that, you know, I remember we were in, I forget the little town, but it was a little town, you know. So much so that I got lost, and a woman was like, oh, yeah, your hotel's right over here. You know, they're very helpful. But all of a sudden, they had this beautiful, like, glass and steel arts building, and it had a cinema in it. It had a cafe. It had a live performance space. It had exhibition space. In the daytime, I was like, where are these people going to come from? There are not that many people in this village. At night, people came from everywhere to this place. And the place was so well-maintained and so beautiful. And I think there was thoughtfulness around light and the balance between material, man-made material, and nature. And, you know, just that precision, that detail, that's a German hallmark.
Mm. Wow. Yeah, thank you. It makes it easier for me to go back there now that you're promoting it. Yeah. So, but you're right with the cleanness and the order there. We have an intern here, and he's always making fun of me. If there is a red light, I still will just stop and do not cross the street here. Mm-hmm. Yes, but there's no car coming. You can just cross J-crossing,
yeah.
Something that I just can't get. And I said, no, you can't do this in Germany.
Yeah, right.
Someone will yell at you, or another policeman will come and you have to pay a fine. So, yeah. So you said that was in your 20s when mm-hmm. you went to Germany with a band. And I read on the internet in an article, I think, for DC Jazz Fest, that you started working for WPFW when you were 19 years old.
Mm-hmm.
Is that correct? So,
yeah.
Was that this time?
So at that time, I was working for WPFW. I was also working for an arts organization here, a performing arts organization, District Curators, which did more avant-garde art, mostly dance, music, theater. And then, yeah, later on, I started going to Europe tour managing at about 24. So I was at PFW, but, you know, back then I was a volunteer only, and I was one of five hosts. We had a show called Black, Beige, and Brown Quintet from Duke Ellington's Black, Beige, and Brown mm-hmm. Symphony, and each day of the week, it was from 10 a.m. until noon, each day of the week, a different woman would take kind of a subgenre within jazz, mm-hmm. and look at that in their programming. And so that's when I was 19 and I started. And I left PFW at intervals. So, for instance, when I was 24 and touring a lot, I wasn't at WPFW. And then I came back right before Johanna was born. And now I've kind of been there. And I've been working there since 2007. Prior to 2007, I was a volunteer only. But in 2007, I began working at WPFW.
Wow. And when was it founded?
1977. WPFW was founded. And it's, you know, the Pacifica mm-hmm. radio network is five stations, and WPFW was the last in the five to be founded. And the first was KPFA in Berkeley, California, founded mm-hmm. in 1949. So quite a span.
Wow, 49.
Yeah.
Wow. And is all the five stations still running?
Yes, we're all still there. So there's mm-hmm. New York, mm-hmm. WBAI in New York. There is KPFT in Houston. Of course, PFW here. KPFA in Berkeley, California, and KPFK in Los Angeles.
Mm-hmm. So, and then when you were 19 years old and working for WPFW as a host or a volunteer, mm-hmm. Was that your plan that you said, oh, here, I want to stay here, I want to work for with radio, like forever?
Not at all, because prior to that point, or beginning around that point, 18, 19, I started to work on productions, you know, doing events. And that is what I spent a large part of, between that and artist management and tour management. A lot of my career was spent doing that work, although I was volunteering at WPFW Weekly doing a show. And it really, even when in 2007, when they hired me to be the music and cultural affairs coordinator. And I was doing kind of what we did with Goethe, right? Outreaching to an organization and saying, hey, how can we partner? How can we help each other? And so I did that. And then in 2014 is when I became interim program director. So I never imagined any kind of career in radio, because I just felt like I'm a volunteer person. And, you know, I know what I know and I like what I like, but I'm not sure if that equips you, you know. And I will say that, ironically, it's been one of the most rewarding things I've ever done in my life. I truly love music. I truly love culture. As you know, I have a passion for social justice. And to be able to meld those three and work with partners like yourself and the Goethe Institute has been sheer joy.
Mm-hmm. Wow. And was Chess and Justice always the motto?
So our programming was always that. We always had, mm-hmm. from very early on, a mix between public affairs, I would say left-leaning, social justice-oriented public affairs, and music, and predominantly jazz. And in fact, jazz as an art form is embedded in WPFW's mission statement. We just came up with the moniker of Jazz and Justice came to us, and I want to say that came through Willard Jenkins, who is the artistic director of the DC Jazz Festival. But that was several years ago, and we've kind of kept it. You know, of course, we've expanded beyond jazz, and we were really, even back then, beyond jazz in terms of our musical offerings. I think we're definitely more expansive now, which is a good thing. But we still retain a heavy block of jazz, because we do understand it as a liberatory art form, one that flows from the African-American experience, which is very important when we look at the origins of WPFW. And now we say that we are building a better world one broadcast at a time. So we do that through every program and all kinds of programming.
Mm-hmm, yeah, that's great mottos. I like them. And so music is so important. And I know your father was a musician. And was he also with WPFW involved?
So, no, he wasn't with WPFW. My father is Sonny Stitt, who is a jazz saxophonist. And actually, I was first introduced to WPFW after he passed away. He had been in Japan, and we brought him home. Or they sent him home, because he had cancer, he had lymphoma, and, you know, advanced stage cancer, not pretty. And so they sent him home. He was on a tour. And I remember the day before he passed away, they did a Sonny Stitt tribute on WPFW, mm-hmm. and we had the radio on at Washington Hospital mm-hmm. Center in his hospital room. And he was just beaming. You know, he couldn't communicate with us at that point, but he could smile, and he smiled. And I think I want to say it was like 12 hours or 10 hours. It was a long tribute. So after he passed away, my mother and I were invited by a longtime and very well-known host, Fish Middleton, to be on his program. And I was 17,
and came with my mother. And really that whole time, Verena, all I did was giggle. I didn't know what to say. He'd ask me a question, and I would just start laughing. So my mother carried the interview. And then after that, so he wasn't involved directly, although PFW would certainly promote, you know, he played it at now defunct One Step Down, which was a jazz club here, Blues Alley several times. He played the Kennedy Center. You mentioned Wolf Trap earlier. He played at Wolf Trap, you know, so he would play, and we lived in the area. But he, other than doing interviews on PFW, he didn't have any other direct connection.
Mm-hmm. Are you also a musician?
I am not. I played flute growing up and piano. Was not terribly good at either and really didn't like the practice. So I really found my niche in being a producer, mm-hmm. producing events and festivals, concerts. And so I think some of that translates, like the curatorial part, definitely translates to the air. I have a brother, though, a younger brother, who sings. He grew up playing trumpet and piano, but we found out about 15 years ago that he can sing tremendously. So he got my father, and our mother was a singer as well. That's my mother and father met here in D.C. at the Howard Theater. She was opening for him. So they met each other twice, and then the second time they started courting. And you know.
So you're really from D.C., so you were born in Washington, D.C.?
Now, see, okay, I was born at Suburban Hospital. So people who are really from D.C. will say, you don't count. But my mother was born here. There used to be a hospital called Freedman's Hospital. She was born in D.C. So I claim D.C. I'm from D.C.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah.
That counts.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, Katia, that's, like, I have to tell you. Oh, there's one last question. Mm-hmm. So you just learned to be a host and, like, running the radio station, being a journalist. You just teach that to yourself? Or, like, how did you learn that?
Yeah, well, so in terms of being a host and curating music, I think I had a good ear for music, and I had already been, no, I'm sorry, I hadn't been working in the arts yet, but I had a good ear for music and what sounded good. And I honestly, I think this is somewhere where my dad being Sonny Stitt probably helped, because people assume that you know music if you're, you know, just like if my father was a painter, they'd assume whether I know painting or not, visual art or not, they just assume it. So in this way, I think they just assumed it and they gave me a chance. But I had some incredible mentors, I have to say, over the years. And if I get into naming them, but, you know, one that comes to mind really is Karen Spellman. I mean, she was a mentor in terms of production and curating. Verna Avery Brown to this day is still a mentor. She's on our air. She does What's at Stake, but she is a real journalist, if you will. And I've learned so much listening to her. Netfa Freeman. These are my peers, but these are also people in terms of journalism that I listen to. Like, what makes a good interview? What elements do you need? How do you book the correct guests? In terms of music, I think that in terms of curating live performance or a season, which is what I did for many years with district curators, translating that to curating the air, if you will, and what program flows well into the next, I think that helps if you have that kind of. But I don't think it's unique to me or unique to radio. I think if you're a good curator, which, for instance, you are, right, you will, the way you put the programs together, if you have that skill, and it's a bit intangible, you know, people can't teach you. You can learn music, or you can learn art, or you can learn radio, but no one can teach you the nuance, you know. No one can teach you the tasteful thing to do. That is something you develop over years. So,
Yeah, man, thank you so much. And it's really, for me, you don't know this probably, but that was one of the best gifts I ever received, really, from someone, was this radio show. I love it so much. And I remember the day when we first ran into each other on K Street. So, yeah, for me, my time in Washington and the U.S. is just linked with you and WPFW, and also your contribution for German-American friendship is amazing, I think. So for me personally and for the Goethe Institute. So thanks so much, and thanks for coming here.
You know, I want to say thank you all, because there were many days at Goethe. Being on K Street was really a respite, you know. It was there was art there always to look at. There was always a welcoming staff person who I could come and talk to. And running into you that day has been one of the best things. Like, you are a lifelong friend, and I hope that our work with the Goethe Institute continues in some form, because it's the work that you all do is so important. And again, it reminds us that there is a larger world out there than often we are exposed to. And one of the beautiful things about terrestrial radio, as opposed to internet or satellite, is that you don't need fancy equipment. You just need a radio. You need to just be able to turn on a dial. You need some electricity. And sometimes you don't have batteries, you know. And you can bring a whole world to people that they may not ever experience in person, but through the stories that they hear, through the music that they hear, they learn about it and they can embrace it. So thank you. And also, I have to say, Goethe also has always contributed to WPFW. And I want to just shout out the fact that you all always were financially supportive of WPFW. You were supportive on so many levels, but in that way as well. So we thank you for that, for seeing us.
Thank you. And now listeners don't see this, but there's a big hug now coming up, right?
Thank you so much.
Thank you. We love you, Renee. We love the Goethe Institute. And congratulations on your next endeavor.
Oh, yeah. We will thank see you there. Yeah, see you in Munich.
See you in Munich.
WPFW 89.3 FM, this is your station for Chess and Justice in Washington, D.C. This is today's final Sounding the Big Punch show, and it's coming to its end. We'll close the show with a Jackson Browne favorite of mine. I just went to see Jackson Browne live in concert at Wolf Trap, and he played these songs, always the very last songs in his concerts, The Loadout and Stay. Hey friends, Freunde, it's been an honor and a great pleasure to host this show. I hope you had fun, listened to some good American stories and some good music. My stay in DC is about to end. I'm going back to Munich, Germany. Trust me, I had such a good time in the US. People treated me so good. Washington, D.C. feels like home and always will. I thank Kalia Chapman. It was always a great pleasure to work with you, dear Kalia. I thank Katia Stitt, my dear friend, for her trust. And I thank everyone at WPFW. WPFW will always be my overall favorite radio station. Foremost, I thank you, dear listeners, for joining me on our Monday journeys across the big pond. Thanks so much for listening. Take care. And when you're in Munich, do let me know. Servus, auf Wiedersehen, schön was. I'm Verena Hütter from WPFW and the Goethe Institute. This was Sounding the Big Pond. Thank you.
Now the seats are all empty. Let the roadies take the stage, pack it up and tear it down. They're the first to come and the last to leave, working for that minimum wage. They'll set it up in another town. Tonight the people were so fine. They waited there in line. And when they got up on their feet, they made the show. And that was sweet. But I can hear the sound of slamming doors and folding chairs. That's a sound they'll never know. Roll them cases out and lift them amps, and haul them trusses down and get them up them ramps. 'Cause when it comes to moving me, you know you guys are the champs. But when that last guitar's been packed away, you know that I still wanna play. So just make sure you got it all set to go before you come from my piano.
To appear a thousand
here, people stay. Just a little bit longer, we won't play. Just a little bit longer. Now the promoter don't mind, and the union don't mind. If we take a little time and we leave it all behind, sing one more song.
Sounding the Big Pond is brought to you by WPFW and the Goethe Institute. For more German-American stories, please subscribe to The Big Ponder on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thank you.
This September, the best in live music entertainment is coming to Bethesda Blues and Jazz. Legendary vocal group The Spinners, with original singer Henry Fambro, will be performing all their classic hits Friday, September 2nd. The doors will open at 6:30, and the showtime is 8:30. Then Sunday, September 18th, talented saxophonist Mike Phillips, along with acclaimed singer Lenny Williams, will be appearing. The doors will open at 5 p.m., and the showtime will be 7 p.m. Last but not least, on Friday, September 30th, the sensational Phil Perry will bring his amazing falsetto to the stage. The doors will open at 6 p.m., and the showtime will be 8 p.m. That's The Spinners on September 2nd, Mike Phillips and Lenny Williams on September 18th, and Phil Perry on September 30th. For more information on all shows, go to bbjlive.com or call 240-330-4500. WPFW is a proud media partner with Bethesda Blues and Jazz.
I'm Marcy Winograd of Code Pink Radio. Shout out to WPFW for amplifying the voices of peacemakers everywhere. Support us. Give at wpfwdc.org/donate. That's wpfwdc.org. /donate. WPFW, building a better world, one broadcast at a time.
Good afternoon. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Here are some headlines for this hour. NASA has postponed its newest mission that will take astronauts back to the moon for the first time in 50 years. Called the Artemis Project, the rocket was set to launch this morning but was canceled because of a slew of last-minute problems. As minutes ticked away from today's expected launch time, NASA repeatedly stopped and started the fueling of the Space Launch System rocket because of a leak of highly explosive hydrogen. They eventually succeeded in reducing the leakage to acceptable levels. This leak happened in the same place that saw seepage during a dress rehearsal in the spring. The Artemis 1 rocket is the most powerful rocket ever built by NASA, standing 322 feet tall and weighing almost 6 million pounds when fully fueled. That's more powerful than the Saturn V that took the Apollo astronauts to the moon in July 1969. Today's intended mission with Artemis 1 was scheduled to last 6 weeks, ending with the capsule returning to Earth and a splashdown in the Pacific in October. Now, however, the next launch attempt will not take place until Friday at the earliest, but could be delayed until mid-September or later. As the war between Russia and Ukraine continues past the six-month mark, Ukraine indicated this morning that shaping operations are underway in the southern part of the country. Shaping operations are standard military practice prior to an offensive attack and involve striking weapon systems, command and control, ammunition depots, and other targets to prepare the battlefield for planned advances. The United States believes that Ukraine's long-awaited counteroffensive attack will include a combination of air and ground operations. These plans come days after America pledged an additional $3 billion in aid to Ukraine. Commenting on the shaping operations, a spokesperson for Ukraine's Operational Command South said, and I quote, "Yes, Ukrainian forces have started the offensive actions in several directions on the South Front towards liberating the occupied territories. All the details will be available after the operation is fulfilled." End quote. To your city news, in New York, police agencies have removed more than 6,000 illegal guns from communities across New York State during the first 7 months of the year, which is a 20% increase when compared to the same time frame in 2021. Yesterday, Governor Kathy Hochul tweeted a picture of herself being shown some of those illegal weapons. Regarding their removal, she stated, and I quote, "My administration is laser focused on stopping the devastation caused by gun violence in communities across the state. This record number of gun seizures is the result of an unprecedented, nation-leading coordinated response among dedicated law enforcement professionals on the local and federal levels. I'd rather be in the crime prevention business than the crime solving business. And thanks to the first of its kind Interstate Gun Task Force, that's exactly what we are doing together." End quote. In the D.C. area, today was the first day of school for hundreds of thousands of D.C., Maryland, and Virginia students. Prior to the first day, mobile vaccine clinics had been set up to help D.C. children aged 6 months and older get their essential vaccinations, including but not limited to the COVID shot or booster when applicable. Tomorrow's mobile clinic is scheduled to be at Washington Leadership Academy, 3015 4th Street Northeast. The mobile clinics have operated from 10 to 11:30 a.m. and from 1 to 3:40 p.m. In today's weather, it's currently about 84 degrees in New York and 89 degrees in D.C. That's all for your headline news this hour. For WPFW Washington and WBAI New York, I'm Darnia Samuels. Please be safe and thank you for listening.